Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I'll turn the call over to Benjamin Haynes. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Shirley. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for today's update on the 2019 novel coronavirus response. We are joined today by Dr. Nancy Messonnier, Director of CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, Dr. Marty Cetron, Director of CDC's Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, and health officials from the Illinois Department of Health. Following opening remarks, we will open it up for your questions. I'd now like to turn the call over to Dr. Messonnier.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Over the last week, I've said that with our enhanced surveillance and detection capacity, we expect to find more cases of novel coronavirus in the United States associated with the ongoing and expanding outbreak centered in Wuhan, China. We understand that some people are worried about this virus and how it may impact Americans. While this situation poses a very serious public health threat, CDC believes that the immediate risk to the U.S. public is low at this time, but the situation continues to evolve rapidly. Today, I'm joined with representatives from Illinois and Chicago to announce that we have confirmed a second travel-related U.S. infection with novel coronavirus. I'd like to hand the briefing over to my colleague, Illinois Department of Public Health State Epidemiologist Dr. Jennifer Layden, who will discuss the specifics about this patient and the public health actions being taken by IDPH. Dr. Layden?
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier, and good morning. This is Jen Layden, the State Epidemiologist and Chief Medical Officer for the Illinois Department of Public Health. I would like to start by thanking our local public health partners here in Illinois, healthcare partners, and the CDC for the coordinated and collaborative work on this rapidly evolving situation. It is because of the diligent work by numerous health professionals that we were able to identify this confirmed travel-associated case of novel coronavirus quickly while also taking measures to prevent others from being exposed. IDPH has been closely monitoring this international outbreak and began proactively preparing in the event the outbreak expanded. We have been providing the CDC guidance, resources, and recommendations to our local health departments, hospitals, and clinicians, developed a dedicated website and webpage, and held webinars this week for local health departments, clinicians, and healthcare facilities across the state. Earlier this week, we were notified by our local health department partners of a Chicago resident who had returned from Wuhan on January 13th. The individual did not have symptoms while traveling. More recently, the individual began experiencing symptoms, called healthcare providers, and ultimately was admitted to the hospital and placed in isolation. As the patient did in this case, we ask that any individual who begins experiencing symptoms and has recently traveled to Wuhan or had contact with someone diagnosed with the novel coronavirus to call their healthcare provider or hospital before seeking treatment so that the appropriate infection control measures can be put in place. Coordination between the hospital, local, and state health department allowed specimens to be quickly shipped and tested at the CDC. This coordination between providers, hospitals, and public health is critical for our continued effort to best respond to and reduce transmission. The Illinois Department of Public Health will continue to partner with the CDC and has invited them to Illinois to assist with this investigation. IDPH is ready to bring testing online at our state labs once testing is available from the CDC. We will continue to communicate and coordinate with our local health departments and numerous clinical partners as we respond to this evolving situation. I would now like to turn it over to Dr. Allison Arity, the Chicago Department of Public Health Commissioner, who can provide more information about this patient and the next steps of the investigation.
Thank you, Dr. Layden. This is Dr. Allison Arity, and the commissioner at the Chicago Department of Public Health. The patient is a woman in her 60s and a Chicago resident. Most importantly, I'm pleased to report she is clinically doing well and is in stable condition. She traveled to Wuhan, China in late December and returned to the U.S. on January 13th. A few days after arriving home, the patient began to feel unwell. As you heard, she called ahead to alert her doctor to her illness. The doctor appropriately asked about travel history, quickly put a mask on the patient, helping limit the potential risk of spreading infection. Her doctor then referred her directly to a hospital with infection control capabilities for further workup. Hospital staff placed her in the appropriate setting for infection control, performed a full clinical workup, and worked with public health to arrange testing for novel coronavirus at CDC. The patient is clinically doing well, currently in stable condition, and remains hospitalized primarily for infection control. The patient has been very helpful as we've been gathering information about her contacts in recent days. Again, she was not symptomatic when flying, and based on what we know now about this virus, our concern for transmission before symptoms develop is low, so that is reassuring. She has limited close contacts, all of whom are currently well and who will be monitored for symptoms. Since returning from China, the patient has had very limited movement outside her home. Now that the test is positive, we will be continuing to collect and confirm information on her activities and contacts. But we know already, for example, that she has not taken public transportation, has not attended any large gatherings. And actually, to our best knowledge at this point, she has not had extended close contact with anyone outside her home since returning from China. So this is all very reassuring in terms of infection risk to the general public, which remains low nationally and locally here in Chicago. I want to thank the federal, state, and many local partners who have worked together, not just in response to this case, but over many years to ensure the Chicago area is well prepared to respond to emerging infectious diseases. Thank you.
Thank you both. This is Dr. Messonnier, and I want to take a moment to thank our colleagues in Illinois at the state and at the local level who've been working with us since earlier this week when this patient was identified. And also, like we did with the state of Washington, a CDC team has been deployed to support the ongoing investigation in Illinois. As always, we stand by to help state, local, and global partners. I also would like to thank all the states and clinicians who have reached out to us over the last few days to discuss potential cases and who have followed up by sending samples if it was warranted. This is a sign that the public health system is working. To date, we have 63 of what we are calling patients under investigation, or PUIs, from 22 states. So far, only 2 have been confirmed positive and 11 have tested negative. We anticipate that by next week we'll begin regular reporting of case information on our website. There are likely to be many more PUIs identified in the coming days. We have faced similar public health challenges before. Those outbreaks were complex and required a comprehensive public health response. This is what we are preparing for. We have an aggressive response with the goal of identifying potential cases early. We want to make sure these patients get the best and most appropriate care. This is a rapidly changing situation, both abroad and domestically, and we're still learning. Let's remember this virus was only identified within the past month, and there is much we don't know yet. We are expecting more cases in the U.S., and we are likely going to see some cases among close contacts of travelers and human-to-human transmission. Our goal is always to protect the health of Americans. We at CDC have our best people working on this problem. We have support across the entirety of the federal government, and we have one of the strongest public health systems in the world. Again, while there are many unknowns, CDC believes that the immediate risk to the American public continues to be low at this time, but the situation continues to evolve rapidly. CDC recommends travelers avoid all non-essential travel to all non-essential travel to Wuhan. We also recommend people traveling to other parts of China practice certain health precautions, like avoiding contact with people who are sick and practicing good hand hygiene. Returning travelers with symptoms, close contacts of people confirmed with novel coronavirus, may be asked to take precautionary measures, and there may be some disruptions. I want to thank those people in advance for their cooperation. Everyone can do their part here. Although Chinese officials have closed transport within and out of Wuhan, China, CDC will continue to conduct enhanced screening at 5 designated airports: New York JFK, San Francisco, Los Angeles LAX, Chicago O'Hare, and Atlanta Hartsfield-Jackson. We are currently evaluating the extent and duration of this enhanced screening. Every day we learn more, and every day we assess to see if our guidance or our response can be improved. As the response evolves, CDC will continue our aggressive public health response strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier. Shirley, we are ready to take questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Lena Sun with Washington Post. You may ask your question.
Thank you, doctors, for holding this call, and thank you so much for starting it on time for those of us who are on the WHO call yesterday. I have a question. Dr. Citron is on the line. Can you tell us how many people have been screened, and is it possible to get a list of the 22 states, and how many close contacts are being monitored?
Lena, I think Dr. Setzgraben will take the first question, and Dr. Messonnier will take the second and third.
Marty. Yeah. We have screened over 2,000 folks to date as of yesterday, and that's about 200 flights. And we have not found any cases. One person was sent for additional medical evaluation. So that's the current status of screening at the five ports, the active entry screening.
In terms of the number of states, I don't have that information today. It is one of those things that we're hoping to be able to post on the web next week. Oh, I'm sorry. I am. Okay. Lena, it's there are 22 states, but the specific information about which states is, again, something that we hope to be able to post by next week. And I'm sorry, I missed the third question. Oh, the contact tracing.
Right.
I think that it would really be premature for us to give you absolute numbers, but I ask my colleagues in Chicago, Illinois, if you want to give a sense of how many people you're tracking.
This is Allison Arwady in Chicago. We are currently working to determine exactly what our lists are going to be for monitoring. As I said, this patient really had limited close contacts, and the ones that have been identified are currently well. We'll certainly be working with the CDC team on the ground to make sure that we have full lists of those folks, as well as healthcare workers caring for the patient. So we're not ready to share details at this time, but we are well on our way to having all of that established.
This is Dr. Messonnier again. I would also just say that given the unknowns, as we continue to learn about this virus, the public health community is erring on the side of caution in terms of identification and following of close contacts, as you would expect at this point in the investigation.
Next question, please.
Your next question comes from Helen Bronswell with STAT. You may ask your question. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. I have three quick questions, if I could. Is there any indication of illness among contacts of the case in Washington State? That's the first. The second, in your discussions with the woman who was in Wuhan, the new case, is there any indication of how she may have become infected? Did she go to the fish market? Was she around people who were sick? And the third question is to Dr. Setron. Dr. Setron, given that flights out of Wuhan have been stopped, what are you actually doing at the five airports now? Was the number of cities that you were trying to monitor flights from expanded in any way? Thank you.
Great. This is Dr. Messonnier. Well, the first answer to whether or not there are illness among contacts in Washington State is not at this time. They have not identified any illness among contacts of the initial patient in Washington State. Dr. Layden or Arwady, do you want to answer the second question about what you know about how she potentially became infected?
Sure. This is Allison Arwady in Chicago. So we're not at this time releasing any other personal information about the patient. Certainly with the CDC team on the ground, we will be gathering additional information about all of her activities and travel in China, just as we're doing here on the Chicago side. Decisions to screen and test these patients, as folks know, are purely based on being in Wuhan as opposed to specific activities. So that's what we can share at this point.
And Helen, this is Marty Sutron. So I think your point's well taken. We've seen a fairly dramatic change in the situation in China with the government's announcement of travel bans and restrictions out of Wuhan, and actually those are extending to additional cities as we speak. And I think that, as you would expect, we are reevaluating the approach. And as I said earlier, the when we first began entry screening with a very clear focus on the epidemic center, that we would continue to evaluate the and balance the utility of a border entry screening program based on the totality of the circumstances. And those circumstances have clearly changed, and so we are reevaluating that approach and watching both for expansion to other cities as well as concentrating the efforts, as you've heard today. It's really important to point out that both of the initial first two U.S. cases were asymptomatic and afebrile when they arrived. And the concentration of resources and efforts need to be focused on the tremendous work that our state and local partners are doing to rapidly identify cases and contacts and assure that the American health is protected. So there'll be a balance and a shifting in how we look at entry screening as we go into this new scenario with the travel closures.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Elvia Malagon for Chicago Tribune. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Is there any indication that the patient had traveled with anyone and when she went to China, and have any of those people been tested for this?
So there were no other Chicago or Illinois residents that traveled with this patient, and we therefore are not testing anybody in that setting. We are, though, following on with her close contacts in any of these situations.
Thank you. Our next question comes from And this question comes from Azam Ahmed with AFP. You may ask your question. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi there. Just out of the 63 cases which are under investigation, you mentioned 11 of tested negative. So just to get a breakdown, those 11 are out of the 63, and two have been two confirmed positive out of that 63 total. Just to clarify that point.
Yes, that's correct. 63 is the total number of patients under investigation. As you know from other outbreaks, we use that term loosely to provide the number of people that we're doing an evaluation with. And we think that the fact that that number has gone up is a testament to the diligence of our partners at the local state level, the diligence of clinicians, and importantly, these two patients who self-identified as potentially having this exposure. So 63 patients under identification, 11 negative, 2 positive, and the other patients' samples are either in the process of arriving or in the process of being tested here at CDC. As you heard from Illinois, we are rapidly working at CDC to get those tests out to the states where they can be closer to the patients to really try to, as quickly as possible, be able to provide diagnosis.
Oh, perfect. And when are you getting those? Do you know a timeline for when those kits will be out with the states or...?
I would say that we are working to expedite it as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And this question comes from Denise Grady with New York Times. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you very much. A couple of things. When you are following patients, I realize that you are testing, but are you also looking at an incubation period? And is there some period during which, if the person is okay, then you're figuring that no problem? Is the incubation period known yet?
This is Dr. Messonnier. In general, the information that we have so far suggests an incubation period of around 2 weeks. That is not surprising given the kind of virus that this is, and so that's a general guideline. In terms of following, you know, it really is the state and local health departments who are following and investigating these cases, and how they proceed with that investigation partly depends on their clinical suspicion of whether this is likely to be a real a positive case. And so, for example, with this patient, the health department had a very high degree of suspicion, and even before the diagnosis, had already started to think about their initial investigations. And I don't know if Dr. Layden or Dr. Awadi, if you want to talk about, you know, what the cadence of what you were doing.
Sure. Hi. Thanks. This is Dr. Layden. So yes, before the case was confirmed, we started to work with both the case, the patient, and others to identify any potential areas of exposures, potential close contacts. We are working closely with the local health department and CDC to prioritize contacts, and we will be monitoring through systems we've developed these individuals through the extent of the incubation period.
Thank you. Could I ask one more just follow-up on that? When samples are sent in and tested, what are the samples? What are you testing from the patients?
This is CDC, and we're generally testing respiratory samples, but we're also testing blood, and we're certainly working to expand the kind of diagnostics that we can do, but the focus right now with the real-time PCR is mostly respiratory specimens and sometimes blood.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Stephen Graves with WBBM-TV. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thank you. This is actually Marissa Parra. I just wanted clarification on how exactly you guys are keeping track of those travelers who may have been asymptomatic and passed the screening when they arrived at airports like Chicago O'Hare, but might develop symptoms later on.
Dr. Setron?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and I think the point is well taken that these two travelers obviously came in asymptomatic, and we are alerting them, and we've expanded the alerts to travelers to include all travelers that are coming from any potential area, and getting the word out through a number of different outreach sources for self-monitoring, as well as the vigilance, the signs, cards, airport screens. There's many approaches. The cards we're handing out say very clearly, be aware, monitor your symptoms for the next 14 days, and this is how to engage the healthcare system safely and have your physician report to the public health infrastructure. So that is the current monitoring approach during this incubation period, and we think that that's a very important process. With the ban in Wuhan, wouldn't expect to see, if the travel ban is effective, additional cases coming in. So it's the last 14 days before the ban where this pool of folks that we're identifying now, self-identifying, is where that focus is. So we need to increase the vigilance and the awareness of the entire system, from travelers, from people who get sick, clinicians, as well as the public health infrastructure, to really be on the alert for that. And we're pushing that message out in multiple sources. An important one is this conference right now. So you can help us actually get that message out pretty effectively. Thank you.
One follow-up question. I understand we're still learning more about this, and symptoms can kind of range all over the place. But for those who, I mean, is it possible that, you know, I understand we have non-contact thermometers at the airport, but is it possible there might be patients who have this that don't have a fever that might pass through that screening because they're not showing a fever as a symptom?
So I think that that's entirely true, and as part of what the message that Dr. Setron was trying to give. Illnesses like this in general have incubation periods, and there can often be periods of mild illness before more serious illness occurs. We're really still working to understand the full spectrum of illness associated with this novel coronavirus. What our focus is, though, for travelers and clinicians is people with recent travel who have fever and respiratory symptoms, and we think that really should be the focus. Now, of course, the problem this time of year is that it's cold and flu season, and there's lots of other respiratory viruses circulating, including influenza, but we ask clinicians and travelers and the entire community to be very vigilant. We want everyone to err on the side of caution if they have those symptoms and they have a travel history, and call their healthcare provider right away.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sarah Overmall with Politico. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to ask what kind of dialogue you've been having with Chinese health authorities, if you have been having one, and if that's helped their understanding of, you know, when people present symptoms or how they, you know, transmit the disease to others, and the source of it, as well, if there's any more of an inkling of where it's coming from. And also on the diagnostic test that you're developing, how long is the turnaround time to definitively say this is the Wuhan virus? And how much of the turnaround right now is just simply people sending samples to you and the time that it takes to get those to you?
This is Dr. Messanya. I'm going to answer the second question first. Once the sample is prepared at CDC, the time it takes to actually do the test is 4 to 6 hours, which is a very typical time for a real-time PCR. As you say, part of the delay is the samples getting to CDC, and it is entirely one of the reasons that we are focused on, as rapidly as possible, getting those tests out closer to the patients so that the results can become available more quickly. For the first question, what I would say is that CDC has a team that has been in China for many years where we've worked closely with the health department, with the Department of Health in China, and one of the things that we've certainly been working on with them is preparedness for respiratory diseases, preparedness for influenza as a long-term partnership. So in that way, there is a strong collaboration. The situation in China continues to evolve rapidly. I think we should be clear to compliment the Chinese on the early recognition of a respiratory outbreak center in the Wuhan markets and how rapidly they were able to identify it as a novel coronavirus and publish that information to make it available for all countries like the U.S., because that step was key to us having the diagnostics so that we could be able to identify it here. In terms of all the answers to all the questions, over the past few days, there has been a large amount of information coming out of China. We're working closely with all the global partners under the umbrella of WHO, but also directly to synthesize that information. And that's one of the reasons that we've been so clear that this situation is rapidly evolving, because information is really coming in hour by hour, day by day.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Stein with NPR. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thanks very much for taking my questions. I had a couple of questions. One was, can you tell us the hospital that the woman was treated at in Chicago? And also, can you tell us anything more about where you're targeting the testing? Are there specific places where your priorities for getting the testing out to?
So this is Allison Arudy in Chicago for the first question. So to protect patient privacy, when the Chicago Department of Public Health or the Illinois Department of Public Health are investigating patients with communicable diseases, we do not routinely name the hospitals where the patients sought care. I do want to say we would potentially name hospitals in three situations. So number one, if we have concern that the general public may be at risk of infection. Number two, we could not identify individuals who needed follow-up monitoring. Or number three, we believe there has been disease transmission within the hospital itself. In this case, based on everything that we know now, none of those situations apply, so we're sticking to our standard communicable disease release. In the interest of balancing private patient privacy and transparency, if we have any evidence of transmission within the hospital, any reason to believe the general public is at risk, we absolutely would share the name of the hospital at that time.
In terms of the second question, the prioritization of the diagnostic kits, we are working rapidly to get it to every state because we believe that it's likely that many states will have patients under investigation that they'll want to do diagnostics, but we're certainly paying special attention to those states that have larger populations returning from Wuhan to make sure that they have that availability first. In terms of other countries, CDC has an incredibly strong infrastructure for this exact kind of development of diagnostics, and we will certainly be working to make sure that we use those resources to help all the countries around the world that are in need of our help with diagnostics. And in this, we're also working with the World Health Organization, who is coordinating a lot of those efforts.
Shirley, we have time for two more questions, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Don Kopecky with CNBC News. You may ask your question.
Hi, can you talk a little bit about the incubation period? Has it been confirmed that it's a two-week incubation period? And if so, how does that compare to SARS, which I believe had an incubation period of 2 to 7 days? Also, this seems to be spreading significantly faster than SARS, although it's not as lethal. In the first 7 weeks, there are about 400 and some SARS patients. There are 900 in the first 3 weeks with this. So can you talk about how this compares to SARS in terms of how contagious it is? Is it considered contagious over the two-week period, and how much more rapidly is it spreading than SARS? Thank you.
Sure. This is Dr. Messonnier, and I think I would start by saying again that it is really early days, and we're continuing to accumulate information every day that is helping us better understand this virus. Right now, our understanding of the incubation period is somewhere around 14 days. I do agree with you that the information of MERS and SARS, SARS was slightly shorter, but I think it's premature to judge that as being distinctly different because we really are still in the learning phase of this novel pathogen that's just emerged and just been identified. What an incubation period means is that's sort of the average time that somebody takes from the time that they're exposed to the time that they're sick. But anytime there's an incubation period, it's not a hard and fast number. There's always some range around it. And so that's why, again, the health department is being cautious in terms of identifying potential contacts. In terms of infectiousness and severity, I really think it's a little premature to absolutely pin our hat on whether it's similar or different than SARS or MERS or all the other human coronaviruses. We are looking at that closely. We have an approach that we take to try to compare different viruses, and we're looking at information that we have on SARS and MERS as well as other coronaviruses and rapidly trying to synthesize the information from all the countries, especially the Chinese data, which is now much, much more available over the past couple days. And I hope that we'll have more direct information about that issue soon, but I think it would be premature to conclude that we know whether it's more or less infectious than SARS and more or less severe than SARS. It's just too early to say that.
Last question, please.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Brenda Goodman with WebMD. Your line's open. You may ask your question.
Thanks. I read in the Lancet reports today that the in terms of symptoms, that this is mostly lower respiratory symptoms, shortness of breath and things like that, and that there's a noticeable lack of upper respiratory symptoms. Does that mean congestion, so that you have difficulty breathing and perhaps pneumonia without congestion? Hello?
This is Dr. Messonnier. What I would say is that information is emerging. I think the reports are useful and interesting, but it's not the accumulation of all the available data. Early on, our understanding is that in Wuhan, the case definition was somewhat narrower, focused on pneumonia, and you can hypothesize that by focusing on pneumonia, you might miss milder disease. So our focus on this is to have a high degree of suspicion for people with fever and respiratory symptoms, and that's how we've communicated that to our state, local partners, clinicians, and returning travelers.
Got it. So patients with this could have like runny nose. I'm just trying to understand what the symptoms are.
I think that again, I would not say that the patients can have. I would say that we need to continue to investigate and understand this. Our focus on travelers and the message we want to make sure that we're getting to travelers and the healthcare community is we're really looking for returning travelers who have fever and cough, respiratory symptoms, but that if you have a suspicion, if you're concerned because you have a fever and you returned, we want you to contact your healthcare provider. It's better to be safe and be evaluated, and as more information becomes available, we will be communicating that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier, Dr. Cetron, and thank you to our colleagues from Illinois. A transcript of this briefing will be available at CDC's press room, and please remember to visit CDC's 2019 Novel Coronavirus webpage for updated response information. If you have further questions, please contact the main media line at 404 639-3286 or email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.